Today is Monday, October 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the European Union calls on Russia to reverse a decision to block the export of Ukraine grains as the war grinds on.
EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell urged Russia to reverse its decision on Twitter, adding that, quote, Russia's decision to suspend participation in the Black Sea deal puts at risk the main export route of much-needed grain.
South Korea's president declares a national mourning after a Halloween crush kills more than 151 people.
Scores have died and the death toll is actually likely to rise. At the moment, they have identified most of the bodies recovered. However, there are still very many reports of missing persons in the Seoul area.
And at least 60 people die after a century-old cable suspension bridge collapses into a river in India. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The European Union on Sunday called on Russia to reverse its decision to pull out of the UN-brokered deal on a move that undermined efforts to ease a global food crisis and that Ukraine said Moscow had planned well in advance. Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports.
Moscow suspended its participation in the Black Sea deal on Saturday, effectively cutting shipments from Ukraine, one of the world's top grain exporters. It was in response to what Russia called a major Ukrainian drone attack earlier in the day on its fleet near the port of Sevastopol in Russian-annexed Crimea. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell urged Russia to reverse its decision on Twitter, adding that, quote, Russia's decision to suspend participation in the Black Sea deal puts at risk the main export route of much-needed grain and fertilizers. On Saturday, US President Joe Biden called the move purely outrageous.
And increase starvation. There's no reason for them to do that. But they're always looking for some rationale to be able to say the reason they're doing something outrageous is because the West made them do it.
Russia's defense ministry said Ukraine attacked the fleet with 16 drones early on Saturday, and that British Navy specialists had helped coordinate what it called a terrorist attack. Russia said it repelled the attack, but that the ships targeted were involved in ensuring the grain corridor out of Ukraine's Black Sea ports. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said Moscow used the explosions 137 miles away from the grain corridor as a false pretext for a long-intended move. And President Volodymyr Zelensky called for a strong response from the United Nations and G20.
How can Russia be among others in the G20? If it deliberately works to create famine on several continents, this is nonsense. Russia has no place in the G20.
Russia's departure from the grain deal marks a new development in an 8-month war that began with Russia's invasion in February. The conflict has recently been dominated by a Ukrainian counteroffensive and Russian drone and missile attacks that have destroyed more than 30% of Ukraine's generating capacity and hit populated areas. Each side has accused the other of being prepared to detonate radioactive bombs.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters. South Korea's President Yoon Suk-yeol declared a period of national mourning on Sunday after a Halloween crush killed some 151 people in a packed nightlife area in Seoul. Yoon expressed condolences to the victims, mostly teenagers and people in their 20s, and he wishes for a speedy recovery to the injured. A huge crowd celebrating in the popular Itaewon district surged into an alley on Saturday night, emergency officials said, adding the death toll could rise. For more, I spoke with VOA's Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo.
Scores have died and the death toll is actually likely to rise. At the moment, they have identified most of the bodies recovered. However, there are still very many reports of missing persons in the Seoul area following this event. This was sort of really the active night of partying in Seoul and sort of the premier party district of Seoul on the busiest night of the year. There have been many more people than usual gathering for Halloween celebrations since this was the first opportunity to celebrate Halloween since COVID restrictions had been lifted. It just seems like this is an instance where there were way, way too many people packed into way too small of an area, and then panic broke out, and that resulted in what we saw.
What about investigations? Has the authorities arrested anyone? What exactly are they doing to find out the cause of this terrible tragedy?
So far, we have very few details about the investigation. However, I think there's a few conclusions that we can draw. There were too many people in too tight of an area. If you look at the alleyway where this broke out, it was about 4 meters wide, so it was very narrow, but also it was very steep. What happened was there was a rush of people. It's not really accurate to call it a stampede necessarily. It was more just a slow motion rush of people packed in so tightly, like sardines really, and it wound up being a giant pile of humanity where people could not get out from underneath. There was no business having that many people packed into that small of an area. So I think that there will have to be a hard look at why Seoul city officials sort of didn't do more to have crowd control measures in place. This is a city where there are frequent protests, and at those protests, you see masses of police who are there. In some cases, over 10,000 police will show up for a small protest. Why were there so few people doing crowd control at this event last night is one of the key questions we have moving forward.
And talking about key questions, what are questions about the slow response of officials to this stampede at evacuating people to the hospital to save some lives?
That also has to be examined. I arrived at the scene shortly after it broke out last night in the Itaewon district, and the streets were still so packed that there was a long line of ambulances and emergency vehicles who couldn't get in because it was just so tightly packed in this party area and people continued to party. So I think that we need to look sort of at what led to this. Was there anything that could be done to sort of improve crowd control measures so that you didn't have this incident? You need to look at, was the response appropriate? You have some officials now who are promising a very firm, very widespread investigation to get to the bottom of it. And then there are others who are saying, well, that nothing could have been done, that this was sort of inevitable and blaming the protesters, which I must say is not coming across very well among the South Korean public at this point.
Was this event officially sanctioned, or it was a private thing?
No, this was a private thing. This was just a typical gathering that happens most Halloweens in Itaewon. Itaewon is a popular area with foreigners and members of the LGBT minority as well. A lot of people who would feel marginalized, honestly, in South Korean society look at that area as sort of a safe haven. It's a party district, especially during moments like this. This was not officially sanctioned. However, it was expected to be very large because, as I said, this is the first Halloween celebration post-COVID restrictions. So people were really out there just letting loose, having a good time. And we really, I think, need to look at what could be done from preventing this from happening again in the future.
That's VOA Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo speaking with me from the South Korean capital. Pivotal 2022 midterm elections in the United States are just over a week away. The November 8 polls will determine if Democrats maintain their majorities or if the Republicans seize power in the House of Representatives and the Senate. Several domestic issues, including the future of reproductive rights, are on the minds of many voters, as VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports.
Early voting is underway across most of the United States ahead of the November 8th midterm elections. This past week, President Joe Biden and his granddaughter Natalie cast their ballots in the president's home state of Delaware. Most states are considered safe for incumbents, leaving only a handful of true swing states that will determine the balance of power in Washington. Georgia is among those states where incumbent Democratic Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock is in a tight race with former football star Herschel Walker. As in many races this year, abortion access looms large.
On abortion, you know, I'm a Christian. I believe in life. And I tell people this, Georgia is a state that respects life, and I'll be a senator that protects life.
Two women have accused Walker of paying for them to have the procedure. Meanwhile, Warnock says the government doesn't need to take part in that decision-making process.
The patient's room is too narrow and small and cramped a space for a woman, her doctor, and the United States government. We are witnessing right now what happens when politicians, most of them men, pile into patients' rooms.
Democrats fear Georgia is slipping away as an open microphone recently caught Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer telling President Biden the party is in danger of losing the seat. Republican leaders say they like their odds of taking power. Democrats say a right to abortion access, which the Republican Party broadly opposes over a range of circumstances, will drive voters to the polls and help keep their party in power. Historically, a sitting president's party loses dozens of seats in the House of Representatives and a handful in the Senate, enough to shift the balance of power in Washington if the trend continues in the midterm elections. Arash Erbasadi, VOA News.
Brazil's electoral authority said Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva of the leftist Workers' Party defeated incumbent Jair Bolsonaro to become the country's next president. With 98.8% of the votes tallied, da Silva had 50.8% and Bolsonaro 49.2%, and the election authority said da Silva's victory was a mathematical certainty. Da Silva, the country's former president from 23 to 2010, has promised to restore the country's more prosperous past, yet faces headwinds in a polarized society. It is a stunning return to power for da Silva, whose 2018 imprisonment over a corruption scandal sidelined him for that year's election, paving the way for Bolsonaro's win. For more, I spoke with VOA's Yan Bouchard.
Well, I'm here in São Paulo, the main avenue in São Paulo, and thousands of people are gathering here to listen to Lula, who's coming to this place to give his victory speech. And up here are just supporters of Lula. But you can see a lot of people crying on the streets, people saying, oh, this nightmare is over, the fascist is going home. So people are very, very, very passionate now and very emotional. But we have to remember, half of the country voted for Jair Bolsonaro. So, but I guess Bolsonaro supporters are very, very sad now. Brazil is very, very divided. The difference between Lula and Bolsonaro was really small, less than 2 percentage points. So the country is getting out of this election very, very divided.
The former president threatened not to recognize the results of this election based on some unfounded voter rigging allegation or machines malfunctioning. Is he going to accept the result of this election?
This is the big question now. Nobody knows what he's going to do. But Bolsonaro is very isolated here in Brazil. All of his claims, the machine votes, had problems, or he was saying that the radios weren't showing his publicity campaign. And, well, he said a lot of things. He had any proof of any of these claims. So Bolsonaro is very isolated right now in Brazil. And nobody knows if he's going to recognize or not his defeat. But for the Brazilian people and for the Brazilian system, the new president is Lula. There's no debate about this, either if Bolsonaro recognizes it or not.
That's VOA's Yan Bouchard speaking with me from Sao Paulo. In other news, at least 60 people died and many are fatally injured after a century-old cable suspension bridge collapsed into a river on Sunday evening in the western Indian state of Gujarat, sending hundreds plunging into the water, officials said. Authorities said the 19th-century colonial-era bridge over the Manchu River in the state's Morbi district collapsed because it could not handle the weight of a large crowd as the Hindu festival season drew hundreds of people to the recently opened tourist attraction. The bridge had been closed for renovation for almost 6 months and was reopened just 4 days ago. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. In Nigeria, an estimated 19,000 people die from breast cancer every year, according to cancer advocates in Africa. Experts say the death toll is climbing there, in part because patients are waiting too long to get screened. A Nigerian robotics engineer has designed a brush he says can save lives by helping to detect breast cancer early. For VOA, Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
In 2017, robotics engineer Kemisola Bolarinwa lost her aunt to stage 3 breast cancer. She says initially her aunt called it a spiritual attack and was praying to God for it to go away. But as Bolarinwa mourned her loss, she decided to do something to help other women.
I have a conversation with one of the oncologists taking care of her then, and the thing I head on to in the conversation is that if you're able to detect this cancer at early stage, then the patient has the chances of getting cured. And I went into research, and my research shows that even out of 10 cases, 9 out of 10 cases can get cured.
Bolarinwa invented a so-called smart bra that takes readings of the breast and chest wall and translates the result to a mobile application within 30 minutes. She says the first model may be ready as early as April of next year.
We launched a prototype this February. That was when we launched the prototype, a working prototype to be precise. So, and after we got responses from all over the world, from expertise, when I say expertise in medical field now, you know, the chipping more ideas, more guide on how we can go about it to get more accuracy, increase the efficiency of the device. So that have to take us back to our drawing board.
Health officials say some 72,000 cancer deaths occur in Nigeria every year and that breast cancer accounts for the highest mortality rate. They blame late detection for the high prevalence. Bolarinwa believes her invention can bridge the gap and is seeking a government partnership to help deploy the device in local clinics where women can walk in and get screened. Gloria Chinyere Oku, a breast cancer survivor, had a mastectomy in 2017 and has been battling anxiety and discrimination. But in October, she took part in a shirtless photo shoot as a way of overcoming her anxiety about her scar. She's also helping other cancer survivors embrace themselves through her work at Project Pink Blue, a breast cancer advocacy organization.
That's Timothy Obiezu from Nigeria. And the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says millions of people are suffering from devastating flooding across Western Central Africa, a region long mired in conflict, instability and destitution. Lisa Schneider reports for VOA from Geneva.
UNHCR said more than 2 months of heavy flooding, some of the worst in a decade, has displaced more than 3.4 million people in Nigeria, Chad, Niger, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Cameroon. The UN agency said northeast Nigerian flooding has affected nearly 3 million people, killed hundreds, and displaced over 1.3 million. The floodwaters, it said, have swept through areas sheltering more than 2 million people who have fled fighting by Boko Haram militants in Borno, Adamawa, and Yobe states. UNHCR spokeswoman Olga Serrado said Chad declared a state of emergency after floods affected more than 1 million people there. She said rivers have overflowed their banks, submerging fields, killing livestock, and forcing more than 90,000 people to flee their homes.
In the countries of Central Sahel, Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali, above average rains and flooding have killed hundreds, displaced thousands, and decimated over 1 million hectares of cropland. Worsening climate shocks in the Sahel in particular have fueled drought and flooding, lower crop yields, and contributed to a general deterioration in public services for one of the world's worst displacement crises.
The UNHCR said armed groups spreading terror and fear in the region, as well as poverty and inequality, have led nearly 5 million people in the Sahel to flee their homes. Nearly 3 million of those, it said, remain inside their countries, while the others have fled to neighboring countries. The agency said the climate crisis is destroying livelihoods, disrupting food security, aggravating conflicts over scarce resources, and driving more people from their homes. Serrado called for more support for those on the front lines of the climate crisis to help them deal with the consequences. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to a NASA blog, the ISS almost had yet another close encounter with some space junk from the former Soviet satellite Cosmos 1408 on October 24th. The blog reports that to give the space station more space away from the fragment, members of the ISS crew had to fire up the thrusters of Russia's docked cargo craft Progress 81 for 5 minutes. NASA says that this maneuver did not affect space station operation. Incoming information showed that the fragment could have come within about 5 kilometers of the station. Cosmos 1408 was a satellite launched by the former Soviet Union in 1982. The spacecraft was destroyed by a controversial Russian anti-satellite weapon test in November 2021. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Protests have been growing inside and outside Iran, initially sparked by the death and police custody of Mahsa Amini, a young woman arrested by Iran's morality police for not having her hair fully covered. Each Wednesday, go beyond the breaking news with VOA's Flashpoint Iran. Listen online at voanews.com or in your podcast player. Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinua Adofo in Washington, wishing you a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Deadly Russian airstrikes using Iranian-made kamikaze drones are rocking cities in Ukraine, killing civilians and damaging residential buildings, power stations, sewage treatment plants, bridges, and playgrounds. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel warned that Russia's deepening alliance with Iran is something the entire world, especially those in the region, should view as a profound threat. In response, the United States, the United Kingdom, and France raised the issue of Iran's transfer of unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, at a meeting of the UN Security Council. The United States expressed its grave concerns about Russia's acquisition of these UAVs from Iran in violation of the UN Security Council Resolution 2231, said State Department spokesperson Ned Price in a statement. The United States began warning in July that Iran was planning to transfer UAVs to Russia for use in Russia's brutal war against Ukraine, said spokesperson Price. And we now have abundant evidence that these UAVs are being used to strike Ukrainian civilians and critical civilian infrastructure. Iran has denied supplying weapons to Russia despite abundant evidence to the contrary. U.S. Mission to the United Nations spokesperson Nate Evans confirmed that there is ample evidence that Russia is using Iranian-made UAVs in cruel and deliberate attacks against the people of Ukraine, including against civilians and critical civilian infrastructure. By procuring these weapons in violation of UN Security Council resolutions, Russia continues to flout international law in its pursuit of a senseless and brutal war against Ukraine, he declared. As Iran continues to lie about providing weapons to Russia for use in Ukraine, the United States is committed to working with allies and partners to prevent the transfer of dangerous weaponry to Russia, said spokesperson Price. We will not hesitate to use our sanctions and other appropriate tools on all involved in these transfers. We will also continue to surge unprecedented security assistance to Ukraine, including air defense capabilities, so that Ukraine can defend itself from these weapons.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.